Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick and Casey. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Citizens of the Republic of Spoilerverse, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenny Cregan. That's Mr. Horsley.
And today on the show, well, it's Meredith Finch, isn't it?
It is. And I was not on this one, but you and Casey were.
That's right. She was cool, man. She was very nice. She's done a lot of work in kind of a short amount of time, actually.
Yeah, she kind of blew onto the scene, and she does some great stuff. Great writer.
Yeah, she's an amazing writer. And, of course, married to David Finch, the famed artist.
Dude, his artwork is so phenomenal.
Yeah, he does stellar work. And she really made a name doing Wonder Woman. And her and David actually worked on Wonder Woman together, which is great. Yeah, they did. But when she came on the show, you'll hear her talking about her new book called The Book of Ruth.
Which sounds awesome.
Yeah, well, it's actually a story from the Bible, mm-hmm. and she updates it to the 20th century, and trying to make it. I think it helps make it a little bit more accessible.
Yeah,
you know, but she's a religious girl, but she's not. I don't know. You meet people that are religious, and they just push.
Right.
You know, she just has a strong faith for her and her family.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, and I think it's great. And she's doing her own work to create a message that she firmly believes in. I think that's great.
Yeah, I can fully get behind that.
So there you guys go. Well, John, you want to sit back and listen to Meredith?
Let's do it.
Thank you so much for coming back. And today on the show, we are super lucky because, well, she wrote for Zenoscope. She actually got two projects with her husband, David, on Wonder Woman. She had her own creator-owned comic with Image in the titled Rose, which was amazing. And now she had a wildly successful Kickstarter campaign promoting the book Ruth. Meredith Finch, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Did I get everything right?
I think so. Yeah. Sounds good.
That's good. Sometimes you never know. Because, you know, you start doing research on somebody and you write things down. And fortunately or unfortunately, one of the bigger ones out there is Wikipedia. And you never know what you're going to get with Wikipedia, you know?
Well, there is a film producer, somebody out there apparently in Michigan, who also has the name Meredith Finch, and so somebody tagged me in a Facebook post about this Detroit or Michigan thing, and I couldn't untag myself.
Yeah, that's
funny.
Like,
it's not. I'm the wrong Meredith Finch. I haven't done anything in movies.
Not yet.
Poor person is missing out on her chance. She probably, who knows, maybe she gets tagged all the time for like writing Rose or Wonder Woman or Conan. So.
I didn't do any of this.
Off we bear.
So I read a story about you and your husband, and this was Zenoscope, and he actually traded covers to try to get you your first chance.
He totally did, yes.
So how'd that come about?
That.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I really did. I've always written for myself.
Yeah.
And it's sort of one of those, it's the medium that I use most often when I'm struggling with something personally and I really need to sort through it. And I had had a personal situation where a very good friend of mine had been in a very serious accident and broken her neck. Ooh. And I was just doing some writing about it. And David read it, and at that moment he said, "This is it. The kids are old enough. You're really, really good, and you need to be writing professionally."
Yeah.
So he kind of approached Zenoscope and came home from a convention and said, "Guess what? You're going to be writing for Zenoscope." My wife.
Have you written anything in the comic book medium before that?
No.
Oh, that's awesome. Well,
Not a thing. I was a little fledgling bird and he kicked me out of the nest hard.
Yeah. That's awesome, though. Well, because somebody like his caliber and his, he's not going to put his name out there for anybody, let alone his wife, if he doesn't believe that that person's going to do 100% what he thinks they can do. So that's, I think that's awesome.
Yeah. No, I think he definitely, you know, he risked his reputation and a certain amount of, his standing in the community to do that. So hopefully I've lived up to his faith in me.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I feel like you're all over the place. Go ahead, Casey.
Yeah, your work speaks for itself, and you've really kind of proven yourself as a writer and creator in your own right. What was your first exposure to comics? Like, what got you into the medium itself?
You know, I would have to say part of it was Dave's run on Forever Evil with Jeff Johns. For a long time, he would keep pushing comics at me, and I would keep saying to him, no, honey. Why would I read a comic that I could read in like 2 minutes when I can read a book that will take me hours? I didn't understand how to read a comic. I would just go from word balloon to word balloon. And that's really not how you read a comic. I didn't understand looking at the art and seeing the visual story. So it wasn't until I was watching David draw those Forever Evil pages and that the relationship between Lex Luthor and Bizarro that Jeff Johns wrote into that story was just so powerful, and it spoke to me so strongly. And I thought, okay, well, maybe there is a comic that I could read at some point. And then one day I was sitting down in Dave's office waiting for him to finish up a page, because sometimes we'll go for lunch and talk about stuff. And I was flipping through Kevin Smith's Daredevil book. And that was, I just couldn't put, he was like, I think he was ready to go for lunch. I'm like, yeah, just a minute. I just couldn't put it down. And I think
that's awesome.
There's a gateway comic for everybody. And I always tell people when they say, I don't really like my girlfriends and I'm not really into comics, I'm like, there is a comic, truly a comic for everybody out there.
Definitely. You know, I didn't know that I was reading your work when I was reading The Savage Sword of Conan back in April last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love Conan. So, I was actually kind of bummed. I mean, I wasn't bummed that Marvel took back the rights to Conan or got the rights again from Dark Horse. I was more bummed because they were having that really fun series with Wonder Woman and Conan.
Oh, yeah.
Right before, you know what I mean? And then that thing. So I felt like it never got a chance to finish. But at the same time, the work that's been going on with Conan at Marvel has been stellar, I think. Yeah. And yeah, the Savage Sword that was a great run right there. That your arc was great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, when you learned you were going to do Conan, what was your first reaction? Was it something that you already knew about and was excited for, or was it something like oh, I got to check this out?
No. How could I not know about Conan? Right. Even if it's only through Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? I was very excited because I think looking at my body of work, fantasy and that sort of sword and sorcery is really, it's my wheelhouse. It's my passion. It's what I love to do. And it was a lot of fun to do Conan because even though I've written male characters in other stories, I've never had the chance to write a male lead before.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun because I live in a house of boys, so I feel like I know a lot about.
Do you guys just you? Is it all just boys and you?
The dog and the cat are both female, if that counts. But they don't use the toilet and put the seat down. It's
interesting that you wanted to take that role on, or not that role, I should say, but that you got a chance to write a strong male role, because you're really known for strong female roles. I mean, if you look at what you've done from Erica to Diana to Rose and now Ruth, you have a real strong theme of strength without sacrificing femininity and womanhood. And well, is that a theme that you like to keep going with your female leads?
I would say that I never set out with the intention of writing a strong female character.
Yeah.
I set out with the intention of writing an honest female character.
I like that.
I think I've been very blessed to grow up in a family that just has a lot of naturally strong women. And so I think that because I have that example, I don't have to try to write a strong female character, because it's just, that's who I am, that's who my mother is, that's who my grandmother was.
Yeah.
It's just what I know. And so I think sometimes when you set out to check a box, that is when your work loses a bit of its heart and its authenticity.
Because right.
Now you're just trying to play to something versus trying to tell a story and be true to a character or a theme or the point of your book.
Right. You're writing what you know when it comes to your characters. Yeah. I like it.
Apparently I know strong men too. Or maybe I just wrote the male version of myself. I don't know.
So,
if I had a brother.
As a mom, has that really influenced your work as a writer?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think part of certainly my experience of motherhood has been a journey of highs and lows and celebrations and devastating losses. And I think that's part of, you know, Dave and I talk often that a lot of times really great artists are really great when they're young, like early 20s. Really great writers, you need to have, I think, the life experience to be able to understand the nuances and shades of gray that people go through in their lives. Like as a teenager or a young 20-something, I felt like the world was very black and white. And it's not until you sort of live those life experiences and realize that you can't always take a stand where you thought, like the ground you're taking that stand on isn't as solid as you thought it was. I think that's why you see so many writers writing or becoming great later on in their life, because they've had that much more experience, emotional pain, joys to draw on. So yeah, the kids kill me all the time, and yes, they show up in the book.
That's awesome. Sorry,
Casey.
There's nothing to say to that. That's it. It's silent. They're like, that's it. Peace out.
Casey had a follow up, so I was just like trying not to overtalk him. Oh, that's hilarious. Hey, you just had a very successful Kickstarter. And
I did.
Yeah, and it's a cool concept because you took Ruth and brought her into the 21st century.
20th century,
yeah, excuse me.
20th.
Yeah.
For
people who don't know, Ruth is the beginning of the Messianic line, and she is the grandmother to David, and your crowdfunding was by design to get the name and the book out there. What does this mean to you? What is the story, and what is writing a deeply religious experience into a book like this mean to you?
It was a very powerful experience for me doing it.
Yeah.
And I wrote in, because I always, like with Rose, I wrote a letter at the beginning of the first issue to the reader. And I like doing that because I think I like the reader to know where I'm coming from when I'm telling these stories.
I like it when authors do that. You don't get that very often, but it just kind of sets a tone and sets a mood and like just kind of puts you in the right mind space before you start.
Yeah, it's like a little conversation.
Yeah.
And I realized when I was doing the Book of Ruth, I had this idea, like, I'm going to do this, like, because we have very strong faith in our household, and I was like, I'm going to do this thing for God, and I'm going to do this comic, and look at me go. And then at some point along the way, I kind of realized that exactly the opposite thing was happening, that it wasn't something that I was doing for God, it was something that God was doing for me. And developing sort of my understanding of him, developing my relationships with other people. Like, yeah. it was very much spiritually uplifting and a very blessed endeavor for me. And it brought people into my life that I feel incredibly grateful to have as part of my life journey now. And then having the Kickstarter, it was incredibly overwhelming to be able to set a pretty high target, I thought, for that book.
Yeah.
And have it be successful. And that has actually rolled its way into some other opportunities that are coming for me. Unfortunately, I can't talk about right now.
That's okay, yeah.
But we'll be able to talk about soon, hopefully. So it really has been far more of a blessing to me than something that I did for God. But I think, you know, as someone of faith, when you listen and you do what you're asked or called to do, I think that's the point.
Yeah. Well, now that the Kickstarter is done, correct?
Yes.
And you're getting ready.
It's being fulfilled.
Yeah.
People are getting their books. I'm so excited. And actually, I'll announce it here first.
Awesome.
I just got a printer or an email from the printer today that the hardcovers are shipping. They were delayed because of the COVID-19, and now they're shipping.
Oh, that is awesome. That's great news.
Yeah. So,
people
will be able to have their hardcover books.
I love it.
If you don't mind my asking, what was your inspiration to bring Ruth into, like, for lack of a better word, retro modern times?
Really, part of it was understanding the cycle of the story itself and how, because it's really, even though it's called the Book of Ruth, it's in many ways, it's Naomi's journey.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And in the biblical book, it's split up into four chapters where there's a period of famine where they have to leave Bethlehem and they go to the land of Moab, and then they have this period of prosperity. And then they have another period of famine where, you know, her sons die and Elimelech dies. And then finally they have this fourth period of prosperity with Ruth marrying Boaz and the beginning of the Messianic line. And when I sort of really researched that and read this story, it just, may call it divine intervention or inspiration, but it just felt like when I thought about history, there was no period in history where we had so much of a period of highs and lows as, well, maybe with the exception of 2020 now, but where,
right,
you know, people were living in such a time of prosperity, and then with the Great Depression and the stock market collapse, this sort of sudden loss where people were killing themselves and people were wandering homeless and they lost everything. And I felt like that period really mimicked very nicely the journey that Naomi was going on and that we read about in that the Book of Ruth. So if I get to do more of these, then
yeah.
I think the key is to really understand the story and then find a way to find a place to tell that in a way that people can relate to.
So the book itself looks fantastic, and Colin Dyer did a bang up job on the art. How did he get involved in the project?
I agree 100%. He is a killer. I just got my copy on Sunday, so I hadn't even seen copies of it yet because I had them shipped to the States, and I was like, oh my gosh, the book looks so good. It's even better than I could have imagined. So
just get giddy.
Yes, Colin just killed it. But I actually found him through Facebook. I knew I was going to do the book, and it's always been my philosophy. I did this with Rose as well, that once I've started writing it and I've got a good first issue done, to just hire the artist at that point. Because now if the artist is working, I have to keep working. There's no like, oh, maybe I'll write this in another month or two. Now somebody's dependent on me for script. So after I'd finished the first chapter, I was talking to Dave, and I had emailed a couple of people who I know who represent artists and asked them to send me, you know, some people who are looking for work, send me submissions. And I just didn't find anything that was quite right. And at that point, Dave's like, why don't you just put it on Facebook? So I did. I put it on Facebook. I'm looking for an artist. It's for a Christian publication. You know, send me your submissions. I think I put it on Twitter and Instagram, too. And I got a ton of stuff, some really fantastic art. But it wasn't quite right. Like, I really had a very specific style that I thought I wanted for that time period, too, right? Because a superhero style doesn't really work for a Depression era story.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And then I went to bed that night, and I prayed about it. I'm like, Lord, because I was feeling a little bit defeated, maybe, that I wasn't 100% positive. I was just like, Lord, if this is what you want me to do, I just pray you help me find the right artist to do it. So I came down the next morning. I sat to my computer. I opened up Facebook, and the very first message or post I looked at was from Colin.
Oh, wow.
And then I ran upstairs, and I woke Dave up. I normally let him sleep in because I'm an early morning person, and he's a night hawk.
Right.
I was like, Dave, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, you have to see this. I think this might be perfect. And I guess the rest is history.
That's awesome.
Hey. Now that you mentioned that the superhero style doesn't work for Depression era, I just really want to see a Rob Liefeld illustrated version of Grapes of Wrath. That
that would be interesting.
Sorry. I had to add that.
Be a lot of pockets. Oh, my God. Hey, so writing emotions into your characters, you have an innate ability to do this. Where do you think it came from that you're able to express these emotions in the writing?
Thank you. And anybody in my family will tell you I'm highly dramatic.
I don't believe it at all.
Our youngest apparently gets it from me. He's, oh my, yeah. I'm the only girl in the house, so yeah. I'm not dramatic. I don't know. I have a few strategies that I use when I'm writing characters. Sometimes when I was writing Rose and I had trouble getting like into the character, I would journal as a character. So if I had to write a scene with Drusilla, I would just journal as Drusilla. Like, I hate the world and I'm so angry and this impudent little wretch keeps getting in the way of all my plans. Or I'd write as Rose and try to get into that mindset. And I tend to, like, when I read the dialogue back, because it kind of ends up happening, like, you write your script and you put dialogue placeholders in there, but until you've seen the finished artwork,
yeah,
you can't know what your final dialogue is going to be. So I try to act it out in my head, how people would say it and what it would sound like. And if people walked in my house at that moment and saw me like scowling and shaking my fist, they'd be like, what's going on with her? She's having a fit here. But yeah, I think I just try to put a lot of whatever emotion I'm channeling at that point. Like, maybe I'm angry at Dave that I'm going to write that angry scene today because I'm already ticked off. So
yeah. Do you go as far as like even changing the clothes that you're wearing?
No, I haven't gone that far yet. I have to use music sometimes, though. I will say that.
Yeah. What kind of music do you tend to use when you're writing like a villain versus your protagonist?
It's when I'm writing a scene that's sad, I'll be like, I need to be sad. And so I'll put on music that will like make me cry.
Like somber music.
And, oh my gosh. I'm so sad. I'm all alone. Yeah.
So you think there's more stories out there in the Christian faith and value system that you can see yourself doing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's one of those situations where the Bible is an incredible book.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the language can, and even just the size of it.
Yeah, the entry to barrier can be pretty daunting.
Yes, and so I think it's a great way to expose people to these stories of faith and introduce somebody who might not necessarily these days have ever gone to church or ever heard the Lord's Prayer, because we don't say it in schools anymore. So for them, religion is almost like a bad word. And so I think it's a great way to introduce the idea that faith isn't religion, and what faith can be for people. So I think there's definitely, and I think the Kickstarter, the success of that shows that there's a mark for that. And I think people, you know, people yearn for spirituality, and they'll look for it in places where it might not be exactly what they're looking for. But I think that's part of our journey on this earth, is to constantly seek and look for that meaning behind our life.
Yeah.
And I think there are always going to be stories that answer that can be told.
Yeah.
So when you wrote, for instance, like the Wonder Woman comic, and you have a very long and very successful run on that book, did you find opportunities to do that and kind of maintain your Christian faith in that writing throughout the process of that book?
I did, because I really, for me, that story and Wonder Woman as a character is all about love. Like, I just, when I was trying to get into who she was, the idea, and she was so well written by Brian Azzarello, who I took over from. And as I'm reading about her and reading his arc, I was like, she just has this tremendous love for humanity. And I think that's something that as a Christian I can totally relate to, because that's the ultimate, you know, feeling that God has for us. That's why we have Jesus, because God so loved the world, right? So it wasn't hard to, and I think if you look back through all of my books, there is an undercurrent theme of love that sort of weaves its way, because I think there's a lot that can be explored, and there's so many levels for that. And I always want to tell stories that lift people up and make them feel good when they read my book. I think I'm not the person that wants to leave you questioning as much as I want to leave you with the feeling of, oh, I'm so glad I read that book.
Yeah.
Dave and I have been, it's funny, because Dave and I have been watching a lot of Netflix, like many people.
Right, like everyone.
And, you know, his choice is always like horror movie, darker, zombie, like that kind of stuff. And so we watch some of that. But lately, we haven't been able to find sort of what we want, so he's been letting me make more choices.
Right.
And some of them, not always the greatest film in the world. I could complain about the dialogue, or maybe the acting isn't 100%. But at the end of the day, he's like, I don't even care, because I just felt good watching the movie. And I think that the way you leave people feeling, I think, really matters.
You know what? I totally get that. There's times where I don't want to watch something that's going to make me feel overly aggressive, just something that makes me feel good, makes me feel whole. And when I'm done, I feel like, oh, that was nice and refreshing. And it puts some of that faith back into humanity that, you know, because it's so easy to be negative, you know, and to be a naysayer. And so when you get to listen and watch something or read something that kind of puts that faith back in you, it feels good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I find myself, I can tend to the negative, be sometimes critical. And so I like to fill the rest of myself up with positive, good stuff, because I can bring the negative all by myself. I don't need help with that.
Right. Meredith, I felt so dirty watching Tiger King.
Oh, yeah. No, I hear you.
I watched that whole thing, and all I could think is, why am I still watching this, you know? And it was just because it was such a train wreck, you know? But when I was done and it was all said and done and talking with people, and then it's just like the jokes about the people that were on and everything, you know, and it's just like, these are just people that are trying to live the best they can, you know?
Yeah.
And they just happen to get caught up in this craziness of these two people.
Yeah. And I do think that's why that show, I think, resonated with so many people, as much as you, because there was an earnestness to what was happening.
Yeah.
Good or bad, there was an earnestness and a sincerity to the train wreck.
Right.
And I think people see a little bit of themselves in that, you know, sometimes I might go and serve people Thanksgiving dinner, and then sometimes I might go and be a total asshole to somebody in the drive-thru.
Right. It's so weird. It's there's another one called the Wild and Wonderful World of the Whites. And I don't think it's on Netflix anymore, but it's just about a bumpkin family in West Virginia, and they've had run-ins with the law for 50 years. But it's just a wild, crazy thing. It's the same kind of thing, though, you know, where they're just so nutty, you just can't believe what you're watching. But yeah. I can't help to think, I remember back in college when I took sociology, and my teacher was like, if she was super smart, and sociology is an odd class. I took like 2 years of it. But my sociology 101 was the hardest. To this day, it's the hardest class that I ever took, because she was just tough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she was the one that changed my whole mindset on the homeless problems of the world. You know, when you look at somebody that's homeless and you're like, why can't you just go get a job? And it's like, well, when you find yourself on the street and you don't know how you got there and it happens so fast, it breaks your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only saying this because, you know, when you watch something that gives you some faith in humanity and that things you can, your compassion comes back, you know, yeah. And you're watching people and you're seeing this. And I feel so bad for those people on that show, you know?
I think the other thing too is it was actual reality television.
Yeah.
So much of what we watch
that's scripted.
Reality television, it's completely scripted.
Yeah.
So it's not reality anymore. Maybe it was 10 years ago, but now everything that's reality television is completely scripted, and people know people are performing.
Right.
That was not a performance.
Right.
It was real, and it was honest, and it was raw. And I think
it made it hard to watch.
Yeah, it was. It was at times, and I think that's why people were so drawn to it.
Yeah,
because it was so honest.
It was such a crazy time.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know very many dynamic duos like you and your husband that has been as successful. The only other team that I could think of was Walt and Louise Simonson.
Jimmy and Amanda?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's true, yeah. Jimmy Palmiotti, yeah. Yep.
And Amanda Connor.
Yep, and Amanda Connor. Who else? There's not a lot out there, though.
There aren't a lot of comic book couples, no.
Yeah, how has that been with you guys? Are you, because you did Wonder Woman together. I'm not aware of how other projects that you have done together.
Nothing. We haven't done anything together yet. I mean, other than he's done covers for me. But we keep talking about it.
Yeah.
It always ends up that he's working on a book
right.
when I'm finishing something, or
timing.
I'm working on something when he's finishing something. And then I think we both are at the point now where if we were going to do something together, we'd want it to be a creator-owned project. But then that means time away from, you know, making money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. Speaking of creator owned, how scared were you to take that leap with Rose?
Not as scared as I was with Ruth, interestingly enough, because Rose, I was like, whatever,
right.
I'll just do it. And you know,
it's backed by Image, whatever. I can do this. If it fails, it fails. If it succeeds, great.
Yeah. New Image, they put a huge push behind it. So I felt okay. With Ruth, I was scared.
Yeah, because you didn't know people's reaction to it.
I really didn't.
Yeah, because when you mix in religion, it's hard. You don't know what people's reaction to it's always going to be. You know, they could either be very pro or, you know, or against. You know, there's not very many people that are going to be whatever. You know, they're either going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that, or they're going to be, I can't wait to read this. So I'm so happy that you've had success with this so far. I can't wait to see, you got more coming out in this series, or is this going to be a one and done and we're going to move on to a new story?
Well, this one I think for now is a one and done.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few other stories I'd like to explore. I do have another book coming out this, hopefully this year, although it got delayed a little bit again because of the COVID-19 thing, through Cave Pictures Publishing, who they're the ones who actually picked up Ruth, and they'll be distributing it. So if if you didn't get it on the Kickstarter, it was supposed to be in the May solicitations. Now it will be in the August solicitations.
Okay.
You'll be able to get it.
So when you say August solicitations, those are
November.
Yeah. Okay. Right? So in August, you can go to your LCS, your local comic book store, pick up the catalog or even online, and then you can order it and you'll receive your book in November.
Right. Okay. Which is just in time for Christmas.
Yeah. Cause I was going to ask you, cause my mom is deeply religious. I was raised Irish Catholic. Roman Catholic, whatever, however you want to say it.
Yep.
For a very, you know, and she's very strict, you know. We watched The Goonies when I was a kid, and the scene where they break the little statue of Michelangelo, and she was like, oh, no, you got to turn this off. I'm done, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She's very classic, you know, 1950s style Roman Catholic, you know what I mean? So everything is very rigid, very, you know, everything has to be done in a certain way, and we had all that, but she's sneakily progressive, you know? And so I think reading Ruth in this type of format, I think she'll, I firmly believe she will love this. And it will be like, you know, surprisingly so, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm going to get it for her because I'm going to order mine in August because I missed your Kickstarter, which I was really bummed because when Jeff goes, hey, Meredith Finch is coming on. And I'll be honest, I didn't know your work. I read your work, didn't even know it, right? Because I read Conan, Savage Conan.
The Conan stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So I start going back, and I'm like, oh, this girl has done a lot, you know? And she's, you know, and she's married to David Finch. He's done a lot. I mean, this is crazy. How did I not know who she is? And then when I read what you were doing with Ruth, I was like, oh, this is really cool. And I went to go buy the book because I was like, my mom will love this. And it had already finished. I was like, no!
Well, see, you haven't missed your window of opportunity.
That's right. Well, this is even better now because I'll get it in November, and she'll have it for Christmas.
Yes.
I mean, because she turns 80 this June.
Oh, my goodness. Well, happy birthday to her.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think she'll get a kick out of it. She won't know. I'm not even going to tell her what it's about. I'm just going to say, you should read this and tell me what you think. You know what I mean?
If she doesn't like it, don't tell me.
No, she'll love it. She'll know exactly. As soon as she starts reading it, her mind is smart as a whip, right? She doesn't miss anything. And so I know as soon as she starts reading it, and I know the book, and I know the story of Ruth is one of her favorites. So she'll know it right away.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I'll have to maybe I can send you a sign something. Go with it for her.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know what? When I order it, I'll let you know, and then I'll just send it up to you.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
And yeah, we'll just get a self-addressed stamped envelope back, and boom, done.
Awesome.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. That would be awesome. She'll be like, what is this? I'm excited now. I can't wait to do this.
Your first comic, Mom.
Right? Because, I mean, when I was growing up, I read comic books incessantly, and it's really my big brother's fault. Because I snuck into his room and he had a bunch of old, you know, 70s Batmans and the beginning of Transformers and G.I. Joe. And my first comic I read was Magic. Well, that's not my first comic, but I mean the first miniseries I read was the Magic miniseries. And then Wolverine and Kitty Pryde and all those X-Men's. And I just really fell in love with the whole Marvel line because that's what my brother got. So that's what I got to read first.
Yeah.
And so I was incessant about it. I'd go down to my comic book store. I'd get a bunch of stuff. But she hated those covers. You know, she'd see Wolverine with his claws popped out. She's like, oh, that's so violent. Do you have to be reading that? I was like, it's really not as bad as you think it is.
Yeah, I know.
Some of them were, but yeah, most of them weren't.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, Meredith, thank you so much for coming on. This was such a hoot.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I hope we can get you on again to talk some more. And when you're able to talk about your new project that you couldn't talk about yet.
Yes, hopefully soon I'll be able to say something.
Yeah,
I'll,
and then come on.
Maybe an announcement about it.
Oh, that would be awesome. And I want you to know that our door is always open. If you have stuff that you want to promote, like new projects or new stories, or even if you're doing an op-ed piece and you want us to know about it, let us know. We will get it out there. We have a great website on called spoilerverse.com. We have articles going out every day. We have press releases, and we can definitely put you into the machine, which would be awesome. An honor.
That would be great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Where were you when I was doing my Kickstarter?
I know, right? Jeez. We won't miss the next one, that's for sure.
There we go.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Meredith. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Have a great night and stay safe.
You too. You too. Right, thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You know what's cool about, since I edited this episode, you know what was something cool that I found while listening to it, while editing it?
What's that?
That she really says, you know, she finds her strength in the sword and sorcery, the Conan type world, the world of, like, you know, Hyberia and stuff like that, which is awesome because I love those kind of stories.
Yeah.
And it's always funny because you don't expect, you don't expect, like, sword and sorcery type stories to be written by women. But yet some of the best ones that have come out in the last 20 years are written by women. Like Meredith Finch and Gail Simone, other ones who've come in and the scene and just written these amazing stories.
Oh, man. I was awesome. Bummed because Gail Simone was in the middle of doing that Conan and Wonder Woman series with Dark Horse. And then Conan got reverted back to Marvel and that went away. You know, and I was like, oh, it was such a good story. But Meredith, I'm really excited. You know, I missed the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I'm serious that I want to get that book for my mom. And she said she would autograph it for me. So I'm excited for that because I think my mom would really enjoy it because my mom is a deeply religious lady.
And maybe we get your mom's 80 now. Maybe we can get her into comic books finally.
Yeah.
She can start collecting them.
Now that she's 80, let's get her into comics.
It's perfect time. It's never too late to read a comic book.
It's never too late to get into comic books. So there you go. I got another person in my life that I'm trying to get into comic books.
We will convert you all.
Yes. Slowly, but surely.
Yep.
Johnny Horsley. We must destroy him.
I already read
him. He has too much power. He is growing. One big set of news that I feel remiss if we don't mention today, Johnny.
What's that?
You had a very special moment happen today, June 17th, 2020. What happened?
Well, the Ion's Anthology book.
We both had a special moment.
We did. You were here. I waited like an hour for you to come over to experience.
I know.
With me.
Really appreciated that. But what happened today?
There's a video too.
Huh?
There's a video of this too.
Yeah, there is a video of this too. I feel like okay. This is what happened. Okay.
Go ahead.
So Johnny ran a successful Kickstarter campaign last year. By the time we got everything ready to go, he's ready to hit order, COVID hit.
Well, before that, my printer went out of business, too.
Yeah, the printer went out of business, which is crazy. And then trying to find the right printer. I find one that we were like, okay, we think we can work with this one. And you're like, yeah, I like these guys. So you went with them. COVID hit. Yep. I was like, oh, you got to be kidding. But then in the midst, they're like, hey, we're back up if you want to do this. So you sent the payment in, and then just today, we got the first 1,000 copies of the Ion's Anthology delivered on a pallet, 500 pounds, directly to John's garage.
Yep, and I got it here in my hand. You have your copy at your house, and
yep.
I'm going to start working on – we did a video of the unboxing. I was talking about it a little bit, and I'm going to get that edited and post it up. And then I'm going to work on building all the packages for all the backers. And going through the process of doing all the sketches I need to do, doing this the full.
We
got to
sign 200 copies. That's nuts.
You got to sign quite a few copies, and then work on getting these around there. And I just realized there's a little hidden Easter egg in this book that I had forgotten about. That's kind of it's. I don't think it was on purpose, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
In one of the stories, that one of the characters has a banner that says "Happy Birthday, Happy 38th Birthday."
Yeah.
Which happens to be how old I am.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that and I was like, oh, that's funny.
That is funny. All right.
But I'm excited for everyone to get this book and see it because it came out. It's beautiful. It came out really nice.
There you guys go. All right. We'll have more about that in the days and weeks and months ahead. Believe us, we're going to be plastering that book all over the place, so we're super excited. Keep an eye out for it. If you like what you heard today, you know, you should go check out spoilerverse.com. There's a ton of other podcasts that are hosted there. All have great content. All of it is free. You really need to get over there and check it all out. Johnny, what else can they do over there?
They can, they can read articles, they can read reviews, they can read previews, they can read a bunch of fun stuff. They can also hit the store button and buy a t-shirt or buy a hoodie or a mug or whatever to help support us, help keep the lights on, help pay the bills here a little bit, because we do all this for free for you, and all the money we use to do everything comes out of our own pocket. So helping us out is awesome. If you don't want to, that's fine too. But if you do, you're awesome.
There you guys go. All right. Don't forget.
In an oceans of podcasts,
we are Cthulhu.
As Cthulhu compels you to do,
open the mind
and read more.